joking. Anyway, LA and Los Angeles, and of course the wonderful glamour of show business, and of course boxing, which is all part and parcel of the show business scenario. We're delighted now to actually, in on the eve of a huge sort of boxing scenario, welcome to the airwaves the fabulous Enzo Macronelli. How are you, Enzo?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. General delight. Now, Enzo, one of the reasons you're actually here to speak today is not only to talk about the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder match, etc., but also, more importantly, the whole notion of mental illness and challenges with respect to that. So just share with us and the listener who isn't aware of the awesomeness that is your good self, what it was like basically when you lost your father in 2012.
My father was my best friend. My father was he was my inspiration. He was my best friend. And the first fight I had after I lost my dad, I was fine. I went into the ring. I'd done my training. I was fit. I was strong, like I always was. And for that split second, I looked in the corner, didn't see my dad there, and it was just like my world caved in. And it took me a while to get over my dad's death, to be honest. Mm.
I mean, actually, I don't think one ever does. Actually, I lost my own father a good few years ago, but it still impacts on that basis. Now, you've got your own boxing gym, and you were under that in terms of giving young stars advice in terms of that. Is that something which, again, it's paying it forward a bit, actually, Enzo, in terms of actually ensuring that the message that nobody is alone, you can always talk to somebody, is getting out there.
Yeah, well, I lost a young protege 19 months ago, I think. Marvelous boy, good-looking kid, talented sportsman, had everything. Had everything. And he told me everything. He told me first time he kissed a girl. I was more like his big brother than anything else. And he was obviously hiding something, and he took his own life on holiday with the boys. So I made sure that. All the lads in my gym and a couple of girls in the gym, I let them know quite frequently that they can speak to us, to me and to my other coaches anytime they want about absolutely anything bothering them. It's a big problem in our world, in our society, and the more people talk out, the more people feel the need they can talk to people, the better it'll be.
There's the old cliche, Enzo, of course, that failure is not falling down, failure is staying down. And as someone who actually picked yourself up off the canvas from that point of view, it must be very sort of positive to actually have that inspiration. And sport can inspire in so many positive ways.
Sport is massive, and people laugh when I say this, or they don't believe me when I say this, but everything I've won doesn't compare to when I see a kid turn his life around in my gym. I've seen kids in the gutter, I've seen kids drug addicts, I've seen kids who just had enough of life, and to see them just turn their life around through boxing is amazing to see. And it's not just boxing, it's just sport in general. I think sport gives kids discipline, it gives them something to look forward to, and it just keeps them on the straight and narrow.
Now, obviously, this survey was originally sort of put together by Mercedes in terms of Mercedes-Benz vans from that point of view. What would you say the takeaways would actually be in terms of things to bear in mind? Always make sure that, no matter what sport you're involved with, actually, you do sort of take time to open up.
Yeah, how would I say, mental health is invisible. The person who's confident sounding, they can have anxiety. The person who always smiling, joking, they can have depression. So it's not always easy to see. And if you're waiting for someone to get hold of you, it might not never come. So what I will say is, when you speak to someone, when you let someone know what you're going through, it will help you. It will help you to expand further on what you want, and get things off your chest, which will make you feel better.
And we've got to have a few seconds at least on your views about Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. Is it going to be a Fury success, or is it going to be a case of, we don't know, it could be Deontay Wilder?
Well, the research by Mercedes-Benz Vans comes in well with Tyson Fury's situation. He's literally been down in the gutter. Yeah. He talked about ending himself. He was in a dark, dark place. And to where he is now, he's standing on the verge of pretty much cementing himself as probably the top fighter in the world tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Can he win? Yes. Yeah. Does he win? I don't know. I've been chopping and changing. I've gone Fury one day, Wilder the next day. Yeah. They both have ways. They both have ways Wilder has one way to beat Fury. It's a very impressive way, but I think Fury has two ways too. Fury could win on points, and in my eyes, Fury could stop him late. So just by being biased, because I love Tyson Fury, I go for a Tyson Fury win.
Good to hear, Enzo. Good to hear. And finally, where can people go to find out further details about what we've been chatting about in terms of Mercedes-Benz van research and indeed mental health issues? Where would you suggest folks should go to?
Well, if you go on the Mercedes-Benz Vans website, I think they have all the information there. Anything anyone, people want to read regarding the research and anything to do with mental health that they've studied, it's all on there.
Enzo Marek Macaronelli, many, many thanks indeed. A genuine pleasure. Take care, and a genuine champion. Take care now. All the best.
Thank you, guys.
Is it bienvenue? Is it ni hao? Is it guten tag? Well, any of those could be useful if we actually made the effort to actually learn language. But you might well say, it's too difficult. It's too difficult to learn languages, etc. Well, somebody can actually address that and probably even teach us jive as well, because he is a polyglot. He knows all sorts of things about languages. It's Alex Rawlings. How are you, Alex?
Hello, good morning.
Excellent. So here we are in the transition period as far as Europe is concerned and Brexit, etc. And some sceptics might say, we've had over 50 years to learn languages in Europe and we still haven't improved in terms of British notions and saying, well, if we speak slowly and very loudly, it'll be communicated. That's not good, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, I think we should be speaking other languages. We should be going out in the world and, you know, representing the country properly. And I think there's no reason why we can't do it. I don't think that we're less capable of learning languages than people in any other country. I don't think we're missing the gene or we're missing a part of our brain. I think it's just that culturally we don't put a lot of importance on it at the moment, and that's something that we should try and change.
Now, as a freelance journalist, as a writer, as a filmmaker, clearly you've developed a whole range of things from that point of view, but I'm very, very impressed, Alex, with How to Speak Any Language Fluently that was produced from that point of view back in 2017, etc. It kind of knocks into the head the notion that, well, you can really only learn languages effectively if you learn them as a 2 or 3 year old. Once you actually get past those ages, it's all downhill or uphill.
Definitely. I mean, I think we really shouldn't think that there's an opportunity to learn languages which closes. You know, it's like there's no opportunity. There's no point in your life where you stop being able to make changes. We stop being able to make improvements. And with languages, it's definitely no different. I mean, I think as an adult, the main challenge is actually just finding the time to sit down and do it. And according to the study by Rosetta Stone, that is the main reason why we don't learn languages as adults. So the point is that we just have to find that time, sit down, be consistent. It's just, it doesn't have to be hours and hours. I'd say 10, 15 minutes every day or every other day really is all it takes. And as long as you're consistent with that, the months will go by and you will see the progress that you want.
Spanish, French, Italian, German, Chinese and Japanese are the biggies. So, you know, no sign of Russian. You know, that's not very harsho, is it, without Russian in there from that point of view. But, I mean, were you surprised by those? Or would you say, yeah, actually, go with those. Most people like to go to on holiday to Spain, possibly, and France, Italy, holiday destinations?
Definitely. I think the main point is that ultimately, language learning needs to be very personalized to you. So you need to learn languages that you're interested in, that you feel excited about learning. Don't learn a language for the wrong reason. So languages like Spanish, languages like French are the ones that we really want to learn in the UK, and they're probably the ones that we will have the most contact with, because France is just over the channel and Spain's not very far away, and so it's very easy to get to those places and to find people to practice with.
Now, back in 2012, of course, when the Olympics were held in London, I think the most significant moment was surely when you were awarded the title of UK's most multilingual student. How did it feel? Was it an ambition? You said, yeah, I'm going to be the United Kingdom's most multilingual student.
To be honest with you, no. I mean, it wasn't something that I set out to try and do. I was just learning languages because I was enjoying it, and learning more and more languages because they were opening more and more doors, and I was meeting more and more people that I thought were really interesting and that I wanted to be able to speak to. So I never set out to try and, you know, win a competition or anything like that. I don't think they even had a competition like that when I was a bit younger. But since then, learning languages, speaking languages, it just opens so many doors to you, especially when you work with people from other countries, when you're looking for interesting stories, things to write about. It really does make a huge difference to be able to speak to people in their own language and to be able to get them to tell you their stories exactly as they want to say them.
Now, clearly today it is International Mother Language Day, UNESCO International Mother Language Day. If I was to push you, Alex, which language would you say, actually, I've always liked that, or which language would you most like to learn? Is there some sort of notion where you think, actually, I've always had a hankering for the universality of Afrikaans?
Universality of Afrikaans is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I think I really was excited that this year the Oscars went to Parasite. I think it's an amazing film. I've seen it a few times now, and I also love that it's kind of the first time that a film has gone to a language that's not in English and uses subtitles. So I've always really wanted to learn Korean, actually. Ever since that moment, I've decided I'm going to do it. So I've been doing a little bit with Rosetta Stone since then, and, you know, it's not the easiest language in the world, but it's really exciting. And just thinking about that film and all the other really cool stuff that's coming out of Korea at the moment, it feels really exciting to be part of that.
Good stuff. Of course, we could also mention From Amaret to Zao, Bizarre and Beautiful Words from Around Europe. I'd certainly say go to alexrawlings.co.uk for wonderful stuff, etc. Any other website you'd point people in the direction to if they're looking for languages with Rosetta Stone and more?
Yes, of course, you can look at the Rosetta Stone website. If you just Google Rosetta Stone, you will find that, and you can download the app onto your smartphone device so that you can learn languages wherever you are in the world.
Well, I'll finish off by saying the interview's been очень хорошо.
Спасибо большое.
Oh, danke schön. See you crossing over all sorts of things there. Alex Rawlings, many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again soon. Take care.
Take care. До свидания.
Time goes by, as we all know, naturally. People come and people go, naturally. Let's be natural.
Now, in a world which seems sometimes to be awash with various communicable challenges, etc., and don't get me started on the coronavirus and a whole variety of other aspects as well, it still seems that many of us are actually in the dark when it comes to encephalitis. We've talked about this on the programme before, and we'll continue to do so because more than 3/4 of adults worldwide don't actually know what encephalitis is, despite this condition affecting in excess of 500,000 adults and children each year and being responsible for the death of literally just 3.75 million people in the last 25 years. To talk about this and hopefully address some of the key issues with respect to this, we're delighted to welcome back once again the Chief Executive of the Encephalitis Society, Dr. Ava Easton. How are you, Ava?
Hi, good morning. I'm well, thank you. If not that it wasn't a little early start this morning with interviews in Australia.
Well, yes, it's the old notion of the globe and the spherical nature of the globe. If it helps, I actually left one of our studios at about 4 a.m. this morning to travel up to another studio. So it's I share your sort of early morning angst on that
Thank
sort of
you.
Basis. Let's talk about this particular challenge, though, encephalitis. We've spoken about this before. Start off, what exactly is encephalitis for people who think, well, you know, what is it?
Right. Well, encephalitis simply means inflammation of the brain, and that's caused in one of two ways, either by a person's own immune system attacking the brain in error, so an autoimmune encephalitis, or by infection. And that's ordinary everyday infections that people will be familiar with, such as the flu, the measles, or the cold sore virus, the herpes simplex virus. And sometimes in those cases, the infection breaches the blood-brain barrier and mounts a direct infectious attack on the brain, causing the brain to become inflamed and swell.
Those numbers that we launched the piece with, which kind of added to with about 6,000 people affected by encephalitis on an annual basis, it's growing from that point of view. Is it something that people can catch easily? Is it a problem from that point? I mean, how can we effectively sort of deal with prevention rather than the cure?
Yeah, that's a good question. Unfortunately, whilst ever we've got bugs in the world and immune systems that sometimes are prone to breaking down or not working in the way that they should, then unfortunately there's very little that we can do. So encephalitis, I'm afraid, is here to stay, and that's why coming on shows like Siren FM and raising awareness of the condition, particularly with World Encephalitis Day coming up tomorrow on the 22nd of February, that's why it's so important.
Now, of course, you mentioned that you were responsible for getting a petition signed by over 27,000 people from 126 countries to the World Health Organization. Is the consciousness level gradually being raised? Do you feel as though you're less these days like Sisyphus pushing that rock up the hill backwards?
I think I ebb and flow on that. I often feel like that. But yes, we were in Geneva at the World Health Organization last week. We were well received. Over 126 countries had signed this petition, and we presented it, and we asked for more conversation, more dialogue around this condition. The World Health Organization recognizes some types of encephalitis, such as Japanese encephalitis, rabies, and tick-borne encephalitis, but we're asking for them to recognize all causes and for us to come together and collaborate on how we can improve diagnosis, treatment and outcomes for these patients and, of course, the families that are left bereaved by this condition.
In addition to that, I mean, just looking at some of the symptoms of some of the case studies that were actually focused on with respect to this, we had people who effectively had complete memory loss. They sort of had almost a sort of an aphasia from people. One individual effectively had a complete personality change and believed that they were the Messiah and a messenger from God. It does seem as though it can be a very frightening condition and indeed disease for even friends and family, really, from that point of view.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the organs of our body that we give the least attention to is our brain. We often think about other things, you know, liver, kidneys, things like this, but we forget about our brain that's doing all this work for us all the time. And of course, when it's disrupted, the difficulties, as you've just described, can be profound for people and for their families.
So, next step, Ava, what can we actually do to ensure that, I mean, it's almost become we love having you on the programme. It's delightful to talk to you. We're more than happy to work through this. But let's look for progression as we head into the third decade of the 21st century. What would you most like to see happen with respect to the Encephalitis Society and indeed the awareness and hopefully, as I say, possible treatments for this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was pleased when I saw Siren FM on my schedule sheet for today. So it's always lovely to be back on the show. But we need people to get involved with World Encephalitis Day. We need them to go to worldencephalitisday.org and encephalitis.info to help us raise awareness. There's lots of resources and things that people can download from the website. And in particular, we want people to be wearing red tomorrow on the 22nd of February, posting selfies to their social media and using two hashtags, which is hashtag Red for Wed and hashtag World Encephalitis Day, to help us raise this much needed awareness. We've got to turn things around on this condition, and it's just going too slowly for my liking. Encephalitis needs to be as familiar in people's minds as meningitis is, and I'm not going to rest until that happens.
Dr. Ava Easton, Chief Executive Officer of the Encephalitis Society. We're delighted to feature you, as mentioned, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Hopefully the news will continue to get better. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Heartbeat, why do you miss when my baby kisses me? Why does a love kiss stay in my memory? Little pat, I know that new love thrills me. I know that true love will be. Heartbeat, why do you miss when my baby kisses me? Why do you skip when my baby's lips meet mine? Heartbeat, why do you flip, then give me a skip beat sign? Little pat and sing to me love story.
Can't beat a bit of Buddy. And as we have obviously alerted the world once again via Dr. Ava Easton, Chief Executive Officer of the Encephalitis Society, to the significance and importance of World Encephalitis Day, which is actually tomorrow, we're delighted now to head off to our awesome nutritionist with another range of hard-hitting information, in which I actually sort of will introduce him in association with Pharmanord with the classic line, Happy Mother Tongue Language Day, Dennis Gore. How are you?
What an introduction.
I don't think you were expecting that when we actually started the whole thing.
I wasn't expecting that.
Off you go.
You nearly made me tongue-tied.
Yeah, exactly. I see what you did there.
Anyway, last week we were talking about a headline. It was in the Daily Mail. It said, diabetes raises risk of early death 50%. Warning, as number of Britons with the disease, that's diabetes, has doubled in only 15 years. And Ben Spencer, the medical correspondent, had written this article that diabetes dramatically increases the risk of an early death, a major report had revealed. Britons with the type 2 form of diabetes, which is linked to lifestyle and obesity, are 50% more likely to die prematurely than those without type 2 diabetes. And they've been linking this to what we're eating, overeating, too much sugary food. Sugar really is the new nicotine. We've been trying to stop people smoking for years and all the problems of lung cancer, etc., circulation, heart problems. And now it's really pointing out that the obesity and the amount of sugar in particular, well, it's not just sugar, it's just eating too much food. And people watch television for 7 hours at night and they're just grazing through the night, just eating and eating. And children, now, in the paper I'm reading today, this was also in the Mail, on page 23, there's a headline, "Supermarkets are the panto villains of child obesity crisis." And it goes on to say, "Supermarkets should tackle child obesity by placing sweets out of children's reach," says MPs. Now, we pay the 600 and odd MPs to run this country, looking after 65 million people. And it goes on to say, the article, that retail giants will continue to be seen as the pantomime villains of the obesity crisis. If they do not combat children's pester power by stopping the placement of unhealthy foods on shelves at their eye level, they claim. In a wide-ranging report, a cross-party group of MPs, I mean, this, the MPs run the country, paid by the taxpayer, and this is a cross-party. That's all the parties in the government, a collection of them together, have grouped together, a cross-party group of MPs, are calling for an end to promotions and discounts on foods containing high levels of sugar, salt and fat. And politicians are demanding that supermarkets put discounts on fruit and vegetables and other healthy produce and promote those foods more heavily. The all-party parliamentary group on a fit and healthy childhood also called on ministers to consider new laws to ban multi-buy promotions of unhealthy foods. His chairman, Steve McCabe, said, "Supermarkets are often seen as the pantomime villain in a national battle against obesity and associated serious health conditions like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers. The charge list against supermarkets includes nudging shoppers into unhealthy purchases to get the cash tills ringing, perpetuating, and here's a new word, obesogenic environment at odds with government health eating guidelines." That word, obesogenic. Genic is from Genesis. Genesis in the Bible, in the beginning. Obese is obesity, not just being fat, being more than fat, being very overweight. So the cash tills ringing, selling all these sugar-laden foods, is perpetuating this obesogenic environment. We show that supermarkets, he said, can take a leading role in helping to solve the obesity epidemic. And it also, in an article above, a small paragraph, the National Trust axes Cadbury egg hunt. The National Trust is ending its Easter egg hunt partnership with Cadbury following complaints from health campaigners. The organisation, that's the National Trust, said it wants children to focus on the outdoors instead of sugary treats. And I myself, Dennis the chemist, has realised that this word treats, which is part of our language and associated with children being told, if you're good, if you'll do that, if you do your homework, if you go to bed early, if you don't make a mess, if you keep your bedroom tidy, all the things that can lead up to the frustrated parents and grandparents saying, I'll give you a treat. And I realise that the word treat stands for, this should be a national emblem. And Dennis the chemist thought it up and announced it on this programme. Alex's programme. Treats stand for terrible results eating all that sugar. TREATS. And as I said earlier, it's not just all the sugar that we eat. A Mars bar is 7 spoons of sugar. A non-diet can of Coke is 7 spoons of sugar. You would never give your child, you wouldn't take it yourself, 7 teaspoons of sugar. But all these cakes and chocolates and sweets and biscuits, they're all full of sugar. And sugar damages the body. So treats terrible results eating all that sugar. So it goes on to say that this year's chocolate egg hunt will be its last. The decision ends a 13-year partnership that has raised £7 million for the charity. But the high-profile sponsorship deal has been criticised on health grounds and concerns about rising obesity. Barbara Crowther, the coordinator of the Children's Fund campaign, said the partnership allowed Cadbury to directly target children with its marketing activity. She added, "We're really pleased to hear that the National Trust wants to make chocolate less of a focus for its Easter activity." A National Trust spokesman said, "Now is the time for change as we look to increase our emphasis on nature and the outdoors. A new partner has not yet been confirmed." Cadbury said, "It will continue to celebrate great family moments and work with great partners like the National Trust." So yes, we've got to come to terms that the levels of diabetes are absolutely rocketing. I think I read the statistics that every 6 minutes statistically on this island, Great Britain, with 65 million people, every 6 or 7 minutes statistically somebody is diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And all this sugar part of the food in particular can combine with the retina of the eye, the screen of the eye, which can lead to blindness. It can combine with the heart, and 1 in 4 diabetes patients has heart problems. 20% of diabetics get this kidney problem, and unfortunately, there are more amputations in diabetic patients where the sugar is damaging the nerves to the legs. And if the nerves can't work the arteries to the legs properly, then a diabetic in particular can end up with gangrene and amputation. And we hear that there are 8,000 amputations in Great Britain every year amongst diabetics. And the number of hours in the year, if you multiply 365 by the number of hours in the day, 24, it multiplies to 8,760. So if you divide 8,000 into 8,000, you get 1. So it means statistically, every hour of the year, all the 8,000 hours, every hour, somebody somewhere on this island in a hospital is having an amputated toe, foot or leg amputated because of gangrene, where the sugar has damaged the nerves to the legs, and then there's no circulation working properly, and it leads to gangrene. Now, we mentioned earlier the company Pharma-Nord. They make about 40 products, which are all to do with the maintenance of good health. I first met this company nearly 30 years ago when I found out that in Denmark, this particular company, Pharma-Nord, who export their health products, there's about 40 health products, to over 30 countries across the world. And when they came into England about 30 years ago, when I found out as a community pharmacist, there are 12,000 pharmacies in Great Britain looking after 65 million people. and the pharmacists are being told now, right up to the hilt, there's a new paper out saying pharmacists should be the centre of health, releasing information on health. Everybody's got a local pharmacist, and we're the guardians of the prescriptions. We do 1.1 billion prescriptions a year, looking after 65 million people. And in our course of training to be a pharmacist, we do many aspects of appertaining to health. So we do pharmaceutical chemistry, forensic pharmacy, pharmacognosy, the actions of herbs on the body, pharmacology, the actions of medicines on the body. And then, of course, we do dispensing, where we're taught how to make suppositories and pessaries and cough bottles and ointments and creams and injections. So we are the guardians, the pharmacists of Great Britain. We are the guardians of our health, and it's becoming incumbent on us to dissipate more health information. And PharmaNord lends the 12,000 pharmacists of England a great opportunity to talk about a range of products from PharmaNord which are made to pharmaceutical standards, just like the 1,000 pharmacy products that we use to dispense on medicines. They're all made to pharmaceutical standards. So it's wonderful to know that PharmaNord, this Danish company, that their products are made to pharmaceutical standards. And talking about overweight and obesity in children, they have got a product called BioGlucose Control. And from the word glucose control, it's telling you what it does. This product is only made of two substances. It's a capsule. Anybody over five could take one capsule a day. An adult take two capsules a day. And in the capsule are two ingredients. There's the mineral chromium, that those listeners old enough to remember that car bumpers used to be made of chromium-plated steel. Now a lot of bumpers on the cars are made from rubber or plastic. But that mineral chromium, we need 100 millionths of a gram a day to do a certain job in our body. And our food doesn't give us that 100 millionths of a gram, because if it's not in the soil, it won't get into the food. And so their product is called, as I say, BioGlucoControl. And that 100 millionths of a gram reacts with the cells of your body. You'll never guess how many cells are in your body. It's 30 trillion, not 30 million, not 30 billion, 30 trillion. And every cell wall has different receptors: adrenaline receptors, estrogen receptors, testosterone receptors. And one of the receptors is called chromium receptors. And without enough chrome in our food, then the chromium receptors don't get enough chromium going in. So in this capsule made by PharmaNord, the BioGlucoControl, and giving it to a child, if they don't swallow capsules, it's easy. You slide the capsule apart and pour the powder into any glass, and it makes a beautiful purple drink. The kids love it. And that chromium will now allow the right amount of sugar to enter the cell. The right amount. Without chromium, the sugar receptor, the glucose receptor, the door on your 30 trillion cells won't open. And the insulin that brought the sugar to give you the right amount of sugar for energy, the door won't open. So the insulin will say, well, if I can't give you the right amount of sugar, I'm going to store the sugar as fat. I'll give you a fat bottom, a fat belly, a double chin. And even if you don't drink alcohol, I'll give you a non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. All those people listening who like to drink alcohol and drinking and drinking and drinking alcohol leads to this terrible problem which is looming up in America. 80% of people who are obese have got non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Alcoholism, drinking too much alcohol, does your liver in. It's called alcoholic fatty liver disease. And your liver is the biggest organ of your body. It's got more jobs to do than any other organ. When you need iron, it's stored in your liver. When you break down insecticides and pesticides, colorants, the liver, along with the help of the kidney, breaks down all these chemicals. And also, because I've explained we haven't got enough chromium, then the insulin stores the sugar in the liver. The one other ingredient in this bioglucose control made by PharmaNord is a berry from the mountains of Chile that people have used for centuries. It's called not the acai berry. You won't see this on the supermarket shelves. This is or health food shops. It's the macai berry. Well, you will see it on the supermarket, on the health food shop shelves and the pharmacy health food shelf section. It's the macai berry. And PharmaNord have linked together the macai berry with the mineral chromium. And what the macai berry does, it stops starch breaking down to sugar. So when you eat bread and potatoes and pizza and pasta and chapatis, all the starch breaks down to sugar. But the macai berry does two things. It slows the release of sugar into your blood, and it stops starch breaking down to sugar. So when you eat these sugar-producing foods like bread, potatoes, pizza, pasta, rice, chapati, a lot of this starch now, because of this macai berry in the bioglucose control capsule, it will greatly reduce the amount of sugar being released. When these capsules came out 4 years ago, I am ashamed to say that I, as a 79-year-old man now, I was about 75 at the time, we just got these bioglucose control capsules in my pharmacy here in Manchester, and I was 13 stone. I'd put weight on over the years. I should be about 11 and a half stone. And I was pre-diabetic. And one person in three over 5 years who's pre-diabetic will become diabetic. I started taking these capsules, the bioglucose control, and I became non-pre-diabetic. My weight went down over 3 months. I became non-pre-diabetic, and I've stayed on the capsules, and I've maintained my weight at 11 and a half stone. I lost 1.5 stone, and I am no longer pre-diabetic.
Which is a wonderful congratulatory moment to come towards.
The Danish company make to pharmaceutical standards. PharmaNord, a pharmaceutically made product by a health food company in the north of Denmark. So they're called PharmaNord.
Excellent.
That's the name to ask for.
That's fantastic. Dennis, we've reached the stage where we have to sort of again hold you and he still continues ever onwards, really. We need to sort of obviously fade him on, and I'm sure he'll continue for the next 2 or 3 days, actually. But anyway, he's still around from that point of view. So remember that little line, the treats, the terrible results, eating all that sugar. Dennis, we salute you. We're going to head off now to Virgin Atlantic, the Virgin Voyages coming up after this.
Yesterday cool when I walked you home, kissed goodnight. I said it's love, you said alright. It's funny how I could never cry until tonight, and you passed by.
Perhaps it's not a case of dancing away, as sailing away, as a very, very, very exciting thing is actually happening when it comes to sea voyages and a variety of other things as well. In fact, the first ship in a new Virgin Voyage fleet is just arriving and ready and set to actually go and to actually talk about this and explain some of the fantastic opportunities that are forthcoming for people who quite like a life on the ocean waves. We're delighted to welcome the awesome Chris Stubbs. How are you, Chris?
I'm very well, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm good. Now, it seems as though, I mean, Chris, your official title with this, from Virgin Voyages, it seems as though Sir Richard is going to do for sailing what he's done over many years, obviously, for aircraft and such like.
Exactly. We like making ordinary experiences extraordinary, and Virgin Voyages is certainly no different to that. We're very excited that Scarlet Lady has now taken to the seven seas, and we're looking forward to welcoming our future sailors on board her very, very soon.
Now, I've been looking at some of the facts and figures of this, and in essence, we have got 1,330 cabins, 78 rock star suites, no buffet of big dining halls, 20 eateries. It's a whole new 21st century take on the cruise liner, it would seem.
We wanted to try and create a cruise ship that was really a yacht-inspired boutique hotel at sea that had an incredible array of entertainment to satisfy anyone who sails with us. So there is tons to do. Whether you love to do morning yoga, whether you love to go and see a show, maybe you like to work out, or maybe you do like to be the last pair of heels on the dance floor at 3 a.m. in the morning. There is something for absolutely everyone on board.
Now, it's obviously just the start, because as we mentioned, there's going to be a fleet of four ships known as the Lady Ships, which apparently is going to be offering adults-only rock and roll cruising to a whole new audience. That sounds perhaps a little bit scary, actually, at one level, but, you know, it's fun as well.
It's the bit we're most excited about. So Richard has a cruise line and is adult only.
Exactly.
It's basically for all those mums and dads who adore their kids but deserve a well-deserved break away from them now and then to recharge. And that's really what it's about. It's a place where adults can just be themselves without having to worry about keeping an eye on the little ones. It's a pretty exciting proposition.
You've also got spas, you've got gyms, you've got yoga, wellness pools, and a mud room. Oh, amazing. You know, it sounds like all sorts of things from that point of view. It's undergoing sea trials at present. Talk us through the kind of schedule that it's actually on in terms of, obviously, when it's heading from Dover, it goes to Liverpool, and then it's across the Atlantic, no doubt.
Yeah, we do. We're on a world tour right now. So, yes, currently in Dover, looking at the beautiful cliffs of Dover. Heading round to Liverpool, and then we sail across the Atlantic to New York to share Scarlet with America. We'll then head down to the Bahamas to a beautiful island called Bimini, where we've built our beach club. And then we'll sail back to our home port of Miami. So that's going to be a very special moment. All coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Now, the cruise industry annually, it's worth $150 billion worldwide. It sustains over 1.25 million jobs in terms of the numbers that are actually there. It's big. It's big business. It's big industry from that point of view. Is it eco-friendly?
Yes. We love to say that we're a red brand, but we're really green inside. We've got lots of things with Scarlet to make her as efficient as possible. I mean, she is We are the carbon neutral. Scarlett is carbon neutral from her first day of operation. We've banned horrible things like single-use plastic. We hate the fact that 9 million tons of plastic ends up in the ocean. That's just not right, so we don't want to contribute to that. And we've got some amazing kit on board Scarlett. There's a climb-on system that basically takes excess engine heat, turns that into electricity, so we burn even less fuel. We've done a lot to ensure that we're looking after the planet when we set sail.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly good to see that those green credentials are emphasised. So also, I noticed that engine waste heat is converted into electricity, which is also good, because it's recycling and all sorts of other bits and pieces. And good to see that we're ready for that. So is this the shape of the future then, in terms of, you know, people actually start saying, you know, maybe people actually say, oh, we can't cope with the air transport, etc. We're going to go on the Virgin Voyage.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, relaxing way to travel. It's all of us like an easy life, and why can't we have an easy life when we're on a holiday? It's the prime time to have an easy life. So just being able to pack once, get on board a ship, and allow the ship to take you all to beautiful ports rather than going through multiple airports is pretty wonderful. So, yeah, it's all about rejuvenating and reviving and coming back that little bit different. Purpose renewed, perspectives changed, and a new sense of power to tackle life at the end of it.
I know that certainly in terms of entertainment, there are lots of regular Siren contributors. Michelle Monroe, of course, regularly does talks about her father, Matt. The Star Trek crews, obviously, doing their cruises and various other bits and pieces. Is the intention actually to kind of also look at maybe customising and have some additional entertainment on for this? I'm just thinking, if you've got any sort of opportunities for a hard-working academic to actually do some communication sessions up there, I'm more than happy to come along.
Would you like to come along? We'd love to have you on board. No, our entertainment is pretty special. We call it, it's a festival at sea. There is so much going on that there is no way you can do everything when you set sail with us.
Sure.
You will make spontaneous decisions in the moment as to what you go and see. And you will. Everyone gets off Scarlet Lady with a different story about the voyage they had with us. But at the same time, everyone knows there's so much more to do when you come back.
Sounds absolutely amazing. Where can people go to find out further details about how to book and how to sign up all the rest of the bits and pieces? Where's the best site, please?
Best site is virginvoyages.com, or head down to your, we call them first mates, they're our travel agents, and they will tell you all about us.
It's been a genuine pleasure connecting with you, good self. I mean, so do you get to do the regular sailing thing around from your own point of view, Chris, or is it just a case of, no, I'm back to the office now?
No. I'm with the crew for the next 6 weeks.
Excellent.
So I said I'm not leaving them. I'm here to April. So,
yeah.
I get to work with them as we get ready to welcome our future sailors when we get to Miami.
Fantastic. Chris Tubbs, Stubbs from Virgin Voyages. Many, many thanks indeed. Happy sailing, Chris.
Thank you very much. Ahoy.
Exciting and new, come aboard. We're expecting you, and love, life's sweetest reward. Let it flow, it floats back to you. Soon we'll be making another run. The love boat promises something for everyone. Set a course for adventure, your mind on a new romance. And love won't hurt anymore. It's an open smile on a friendly shore.